Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and as always, former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. So, England have now won just one of their last 17 test matches, lost five series in a row, including a series defeat against the West Indies. We'll hear exclusively in a minute from under fire captain Joe Root, who talks to Harmy about his future. We'll look at how English cricket can recover and how specifically the standard of the test team can be raised. We'll get the thoughts from Warwickshire's director of cricket, Paul Farbrace, and hear from former England batsman Kevin Peterson. We'll also look ahead to the Women's World Cup semi-finals, with England facing South Africa in a repeat of the 2017 semi-final and Australia hosting the West Indies. So plenty to come. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Well, my travels are complete. I'm back home. Harmy's not. He's still in Grenada. You would have wanted to get an earlier flight, probably, but there were about 6,000 supporters who also wanted to get an earlier flight. So have you bumped into the players? I mean, what's the mood like? You know, this idea that players should walk around with long faces and not be seen and stand in the naughty corner because they lost a game of cricket is a bit outdated, I think. Hopefully they were able to drown their sorrows or do whatever you do in Grenada after the game?
Yeah, I've seen one or two of them. And yeah, it's hard. The world we live in now, and social media, camera phones, you can't get anywhere away when things aren't going well. But they're hurting. They really are. They're disappointed. They're hurting. Yeah, look, it is when you lose like the way England did after the first two test matches, it is very, very difficult, both physically because of what's happened mentally. And then you've got to sort of somehow try to build yourself up, but you know, relax at the same time because there's a lot of long time between the next test match. And that's always a fine balance. And the fine art of being a professional cricketer, an international cricketer, is when you have got your recovery time and you have got your downtime, being allowed to have it. And that is off the back of what was a tough 3 days, because I think there's been good things happening on this trip. I really do. I think England have moved some positive things. But unfortunately, there are two batting collapses. What we've said, what we've seen many, many times over the last few years, in the space of 3 days, got a test decider. And that's what's hurting these guys, I think.
OK, let's remind ourselves of your chat with Joe Root shortly after the test.
As you've seen on this tour, there's a way forward for this team. They've shown a lot of promise. They've shown a lot of good stuff, and that we are making strides forward. I'm very passionate about that and about taking it on, and you know, that's not going to waver. I think I've made that quite clear.
And the inevitable questions about Broad and Anderson not being here, have you learned anything about them not being here, and will we see them in the summer?
Well, I think as mentioned, we've learned a lot about the guys that are here, and you know,
what have you learned about the guys that are here?
Well, I think you look at the two guys that have come in, how exciting that they are as young fast bowlers, what they can offer to this team moving forward. You know, and you could argue about what could Jimmy and Brodie do in these conditions, but you could also say about the guys that have been injured that were on this trip as well. A guy like Mark Wood on this surface could have been a nightmare, similarly with like Savali Robinson, and that's not taken away from the guys that have played at all. But we've learned more about that bowling group and the depth within it, and guys have had to stand up and take different roles on. And Now, from that, we've got more information and we know more about where we are as a team.
And finally, from me, there's a lot of time between now and June the 2nd. There's a lot of positions to be filled. Top end of ECB and structure and everything that goes in place. What would you like to see as England captain between now and then? And what's the message for England supporters between now and then that's going to, you know, encourage them and have the benefit of positivity of England going forward?
Well, I think the one thing that's from a positive note from this trip is the attitude of the group of players that we've got here and how determined they are to try and turn things around for this test team. It's clear for me to see, I hope it's clear for everyone at home to see as well, that we are making strides forward. In terms of everything else, it's completely out of my control. All you know is all I can say is we've got a very passionate group of players and coaching staff and support staff. They're desperate to see England win test matches again and in the very near future, and we'll throw everything we can, all of our energies, into making that happen sooner rather than later.
That was Joe Root chatting to you after the game, Harmy. It was said that he was in full denial mode. He put a really, really positive spin on things. And, you know, on the one hand, England were on the front foot in the first two test matches. It was the tourists who were pushing for victory. It just seems to me that the good things that England did were okay, and the bad things were spectacularly bad. That was the problem. Is Joe in denial? I mean, there was no sense at all of him being aware of the pressure on him and the calls for him to step aside as captain?
No, he knows the pressure's on him. He knows there's big calls for him to step aside. If I was advising him as a friend, I would tell him to seriously consider it from his own good, nothing else, just for himself, because it's happening far too many times now and he's got no control of it. Yes, he's part of the he's part of the batting unit that capitulate and fall like a pack of cards, but he's only one. He's only one at the... You're only as good as your sort of players, and in recent times England have been really, really poor. I don't buy the knowledge of it has to be Joe Root because there's nobody else. That's not Joe Root's fault. That's ECB's fault to come up with a solution and an answer. And when it comes to the only obvious choice, I think I can say 90% certain there's nowhere Ben Stokes would take it if England sacked Joe Root. They're too close. Ben's such a loyal man. Got to remember, this guy, Ben Stokes, has been stood by Joe Root through a lot of stuff. And I don't think there's for any one minute that it would be as simple as taking Joe Root out and putting Ben Stokes in. But given that, Joe wants to carry on. You see, he's in denial. Chat I had with him, little brief things that I've sort of spoke to him. Well, the heat is on. He thinks there's corners being turned. Thinks as though there's things happening for the better. The problem is, the one big problem that they've got is that the crack under pressure, and that's something he can't control. And unfortunately, it's happened twice in the space of 4 days, and it just magnifies what's happened before. And it dissolves some of the good things that have gone on this trip, because I've been out here and seen what they're doing, how they're doing it. There's a lot of good stuff happening behind the scenes, which I think is going in the right direction. And Joe might feel as though, right, just stick with me. We've turned a corner and we're going to go forward, as opposed to same old, same old. I don't think it is same old, same old.
All right. For everybody who says that Joe should step aside, there is another, including Kevin Peterson, who says that it would make no difference.
I like Joe Root as a person, and I think that with a better team, he would be a very good captain, yes. He just doesn't have players good enough. For the players that he has and some of the decisions that he has to make because of who he's got in his setup and the pressure that he's under every single day he plays, yes.
That's Kevin Peterson advocating the line that the captain is only as good as his players. Let's also remind ourselves of what Matt Prior said, talking about the options to replace Joe as captain.
I think more the question is, how on earth in England do we have one option as an England captain?
Can the cupboard really be that
bare? You can't tell me Joe Root has been kept on by the ECB because he deserved it. He absolutely didn't. He's been kept on because they don't have an alternative option.
That's our fellow commentator and former England wicketkeeper, Matt Prior, talking about the options. Harmy, I think we all agree that keeping a leader in any business because of a lack of viable alternatives is a really poor reason to keep that leader. But there aren't any options. I mean, there are, of course there are. You know, I agree with you. I don't think Ben Stokes would be in England's best interests, and certainly not in Ben Stokes' best interests. But Sam Billings has been mentioned, which I find strange, to say the least. Tom Abel is a very successful young captain at Somerset. James Vince is a fine leader of men. Rory Burns is spoken about very, very highly by those who've played under him. So there are options. But then again, England don't play again a test match until June. So, you know, there's time, and we don't need to make any knee-jerk decisions, or the ECB doesn't. In fact, who would make the decision at the ECB anyway? Because those positions all need to be filled first.
That's the problem. The system's our problem, not the individuals. The individuals might not be good enough, but the system's our problem. And we need to fix that first. Chairman, chief executive, when he goes, you know, the MD, director of cricket, coach. Because I think there's only one coach coming in. I think Paul Collingwood's done enough out here to do the white ball side. But what I've seen, and I've got a huge amount of respect for Sam, lovely kid. I don't really know Tom Abel. James Vince is a nice lad as well. But when I seen them, I couldn't stop laughing. I really couldn't. When I seen some very well-educated men saying Sam Billings should captain the England cricket team, I nearly fell off my bar stool. It was that bad. I was like, really? Sam Billings? Nothing against Sam. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. He's a quality player. He's played one test match where he had to drive 900 miles for because there was nobody else in Australia with an English passport to keep wicket. And that's not against Sam, because he can play. He's a decent cricketer. But he's played, in the last 3 years, he's played hardly any cricket altogether. He's been on the sort of sidelines of a lot of teams. So to go and put looking him out of a hat like that, when we haven't got enough 11 good test players to fudge aside, never mind having somebody in who wouldn't get in the side to captain it. When you've got a captain like Joe Root with some average players, then why would you give it to somebody that's never captained a side and add another player who potentially is not good enough into the run? You know, can you see Sam Billings saying to Joe Root, go and stand over there, go and do that? How does Sam Billings deal with Broad and Anderson? Because they're going to come back in the summer. So that's, and I feel for Sam, haven't been to be put in that position. But for me, that if Ben wouldn't do it, there's only one candidate to get you till the end of summer, and that would be Stuart Broad.
Yeah.
Because he warrants his place in the side, the respect that everybody's got for him, and he can captain a side. But that would be a short-term fix to get to the end of the summer, and then hopefully the coach gets their feet under the table, director of cricket get their feet on the table, and we start playing some better cricket. But at this minute in time, Joe Root, for me, even though I did say if I would advise him to resign, Joe Root for me would captain the summer, because not because there's anybody else, but there's nobody else good enough to get into the side that can captain the side. So you pick your best side and then you pick your best captain. And unfortunately, that's Joe at the minute.
That is exactly what I was just about to say as we go into the break. Australian cricket has always, never, ever, ever changed the system where you pick your best team and then go for a captain, whether he's a modest captain or not. England have got a history of picking a team or picking a captain and then picking a team and allowing him to influence the selection of that team. And I think it's problematic. You go right back to 1988, I think it was, when Chris Cowdrey was made England captain because of a lack of captains. He was selected to play for England on the basis of his ability as a captain. And that's a problem that still lingers. We can maybe touch on that in the second half. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll speak live to the Warwickshire director of cricket, Paul Farbrace, and ask him what can be done in modern day coaching to improve the test side.
You have to franchise county cricket. You have to bring the best players together, playing against each other as much as possible. Get rid of the riffraff, get rid of a lot of the players. There are too many counties, way too many counties. And there's people smart enough to deal with how you structure it. However, you bring the best players. smaller amount of teams, 8 or 9 franchises. And you know what? You pay some overseas players big bucks to come and play 8 first-class games or 9 first-class games a season in the UK. They'll do it. Pay them £500,000, £750,000, £1 million. I don't care. These guys have all got money from broadcast rights. We all understand broadcast rights. They've got the money.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the great man, Steve Harmison, as we continue to ask how the England Test side can recover after their series defeat to the West Indies last week. And that was former England captain Kevin Peterson talking on TalkSport Breakfast about the idea of franchising county cricket. Delighted to say, as promised at the top of the programme, we're joined live by Warwickshire's Director of Cricket, Paul Farbrace, who obviously followed proceedings in the Caribbean. So many questions for you, Farby. Many thanks for your time. Kevin Peterson's off with the fairies, isn't he? Talking about franchising first-class cricket.
It's not going to happen, is it? I mean, look, we've had this debate so many times. You know, we've all of us have chatted about this. Every time England have a tough winter, we analyse county cricket till the cows come home. County cricket's not going to change. It's there. We've got 18 counties. We've got some fantastic players. And despite what Rooty said a few months ago in Australia, when he was probably at a very low ebb, and he said that England was succeeding despite county cricket. I mean, again, that's nonsense. County cricket is strong. It's a fantastic game. Yes, we need to keep improving our pitches. Yes, we need to make sure that we're playing county cricket in the right times of the summer. But the county game has produced so many fantastic players, and it will continue to produce so many fantastic players. England are going through a slump at the moment. It's a really tough time, but let's not start attacking our own county game. Let's actually look at the good things about county cricket, and let's just make sure we've got the right people in the right places, because there is definitely the talent in the county game to make England a top test side again.
Farby, what about the sort of coaching? I agree with you in a sort of wonderful world, we'd love the best pool of 8 players of first-class cricketers to play against each other. But we've never had that. Yeah. We've never had that, and we're never going to have that. So I agree with that point. I would like to see us play less games, give the groundsmen chances to produce better pitches. Which...
Well, I mean, on that, Harvey, sorry to jump in. I get quite defensive on county cricket and county pitches. And I've been back in county cricket for 3 years, having worked in international cricket for 7 or 8 years before that. And, you know, I keep hearing county pitches are poor. That there are very few times last year, and I dread to say it, but Durham, we had a very poor pitch because the ground was square was relayed, and they tried very hard there to, as you know, to redo the surface. And we got caught on a damp surface, and we played really poorly, and we lost the game. Now, other than that, we played on some very good pitches. We won the county championship playing on excellent pitches in county cricket. Liam Norwell got 50 wickets in the county championship for us. Rob Yates got 500s in county cricket, batting on very good pitches at Edgbaston. The only thing we talked to Gary Barwell about is make sure that defensive nicks carry to slip. And that's something that Jason Gillespie instilled in me during my time, that you were also there for a period of that, during our time at Headingley. And that was something that stuck in my mind. Defensive nicks carry to slip mean that the ball is bouncing. Everyone's in the game. Now, all of our championship games went to after lunch on the last day this season. And the only game that didn't, we finished between lunch and tea. Other than that, every game went to the last session, including the last game against Somerset that we had to win to have any chance of winning the county championship. Now, you can play on good pitches. We do play on good pitches. The coaching bit that you mentioned earlier, I said a couple of months ago, and I would stick with this, there's a lot of lazy coaching in English cricket. And by that, I don't mean coaches are not going to the nets and working hard, because they are. There's a lot of hard-working, fantastic coaches in county cricket. But I think with all of us, and I put myself in this category, because of white ball cricket, because of the emergence of franchise cricket around the world and the chance for players to make money away from county cricket, because county cricket is no longer the main place for majority of English cricketers to earn their money. We are no longer holding the cards as the county clubs. When you and I first started, county cricket was your main source of income. The county clubs held your contract, and the only way you could earn any more money was to get into the international team. Now, there are so many options, so many much franchise cricket around the world, that players can go and play all around the world. I was lucky enough to go and coach a team Team Abu Dhabi in the T10 League back in November, December. And it was fantastic. It was brilliant. I had county players in there, international players. And I had Chris Gayle in my side, Leon Livingston. You know, and I managed to get a couple of players from Warwickshire into that team. And it was an opportunity for them to learn from some great players and learn to play against great players. So I think what's happened is that in terms of us coaches, I think we've encouraged players just to look to hit the ball hard, play big shots, enjoy themselves, have fun, come out of a session saying, have you enjoyed that? Yeah, great. And that's really, it's easy coaching, but it's lazy coaching. I don't see enough high quality, highly gifted technical players playing county cricket at the moment. And that is my biggest concern that we have in terms of righting this wrong that we've got with our test team at the moment.
You mentioned the coaching. Are the coaches, some of the coaches insecure? Because I've always felt as though, how can a coach not, he must be able to see it. I look at international cricket. I look at Ollie Pope in the winter. I look at Zach Crawley at the minute. This thing of batting on off stump, throwing your hands at everything outside off stump. Or surely top coaches can see that, but they're so insecure that they'll not rock a boat with a player because I'm hearing player led this, player led that. Well, if a player is led down the wrong line, or he's thinking about down the wrong line, then the coach should be good enough, strong enough and man enough to say, hold on, you can't play like that. You're not going to last 2 minutes like that. And I just feel sometimes from a coaching point of view that we produce insecure coaches who will not do that, because if they do, then you upset the pupil, i.e. the player.
Yeah.
And then when it comes round to your interview to go on the next tour, the player says, well, I don't want him to coach me because I don't like him.
100% right. And I think that's happening in the game completely. I think that there's a couple of areas on that. I think player power, and we're hearing that a lot. You know, we've seen in the winter, you know, Justin Langer, who we all know what Justin Langer's like. Justin Langer, you know, intense, you know, drives the rest of him. Really? That's a surprise, isn't it? I mean, that really is a shock that that's Justin Langer. Because
is
Justin
that not Langer, what a coach is supposed to do?
Well, he's a very driven bloke. And now he turned that Australian dressing room absolutely around from having a tough reputation. They had a poor time in South Africa, all the stuff that went on with the sandpaper. And he has got them to winning a T20 World Cup, to winning an Ashes and playing absolutely brilliantly. Then, on the other hand, you get the other side of the coin is that we're hearing that Chris Silverwood perhaps wasn't strong enough with the players, you know, wasn't tough enough with the players. So, but we're saying, let's bring Justin Langer in, put him in charge of the England dressing room. The way that we speak to players as coaches has definitely changed. Again, from when we started playing, people told you what to do, you did it, you listened, you go on and did it. Now, there is more discussion with players, and players don't like being shouted out. They don't like being told what to do. I had to change my way. I got sacked at Kent because I was one of those very direct coaches who got stuck into people and people didn't like my way of being. Well, I had to go away and learn. And since then, you know, I've done okay in the game. I've done all right. I've managed to get involved with teams that have managed to win a few trophies along the way. But you're absolutely right. There is a danger that if you're too hot and you're too strong on players and you're too tough with them, and every player needs something different from you as a coach. Every single player needs something different from you. You know, you can't treat Steve Harmison the way you would treat Matthew Hoggard. You can't treat Michael Vaughan the way you would treat Kevin Peterson. You treat everyone differently. And it's the same, you know, Anderson, Broad, Root, Cook, all those fantastic players I was lucky enough to work with. You treat them differently. You find out about them. But that's what the best coaches do. You know, the best coaches are the best man managers. They understand the person. They speak to them at the right level. And you cajole them. Ben Stokes is a great example. I didn't need to be a genius to get the best out of Ben Stokes when I had the little interim period in charge. I just said to Ben, mate, you're batting at six. You're bowling every over you can manage and go where the ball's going to go in the field because I reckon you can make a difference. And you gave him all the love that he needed. And you told him he was your star man. Go out and perform. Go and play. There's a shock. He goes out and performs. He gets 190 in the same game. He gets key wickets in the second innings. He takes catches and he wins games for you. And that's what I think coaching is about. But you're absolutely right. I think there has become a nervousness to start saying to people directly, this is what you need to do. If you want to succeed at test match cricket, Zach Crawley, you've got to put away the big drive outside off stump. You've got to stop throwing your hands at balls. You can't bat on off stump. I am absolutely adamant on that. There are non-negotiables in the game of cricket. Batting on off stump, you've got to get rid of it. We've got to stop it happening in our game because batters are now getting beaten on the outside and the inside edge. You know, you as a bowler, if you saw someone standing on off stump, absolutely happy days. You've got more options of getting them out because the idea that they tell you that they stand on off stump, they know where the off stump is, but yet they're still defending balls as England did in the winter, defending balls that are not hitting another set of stumps. And the only thing that you ever defend when you're batting is yourself and your stumps. Why are you defending a ball that's going to hit six stumps? Because there's no six stump. The game has, the rules haven't changed. There are no more than three stumps. So defend them. You know, I heard you talking brilliantly over this last test match on television. You were talking about if you bowl straight, the best players in the world from middle and leg just hit you through the leg side. You have to bowl fourth stump line and keep dragging people across the line. Well, our batters are making it easy for the bowlers. They're standing there and they're making it easy. So actually, they're making the job of the bowler so much easier. And again, I think, and you're absolutely right, that's because coaches are nervous about saying it's not going to work for you. And people have to be brave enough to say it's not going to work. Come on, you've got to change the way you play. Because if you don't, you're going to play a few games and you're going to be back to county cricket again. And then you go away and you work at your game. And we can't afford for England to keep chopping and changing our top six. We just can't afford to do that.
Bobby, it just sounds like all you've learnt to do is put a velvet glove on your iron fist. And that you should run a course in that art. Can I ask you about a couple of personnel? Yes. Dom Sibley. I mean, Dom Sibley's got a couple of test hundreds. He seemed to decline when he was in the England setup. We're hearing terrific things that he's reinvented himself and he's looking terrific. I don't expect you to be impartial or unbiased, obviously. And Rob Yates, yep. massive hopes for him. So how would you go about reintroducing or introducing them to the England setup if they are somewhere on the rank of cabs? I presume they are.
Yeah, look, I think they're both at two very different stages. I mean, again, it's ironic that, you know, there were periods during the winter, this winter, when, you know, England and Alex Lees, I thought Alex Lees did really well. Each game, I thought he got better and better. And I was really impressed with Lees. He's someone that I worked with at Yorkshire many years ago. You know, he's the most stubborn bloke in the world, but I think he's got the mentality for test match cricket. I really do. And some of the best players I've come across, and Harmy would agree, the best players, they are stubborn. They know their game. Alistair Cook, most stubborn bloke I've ever worked with in my life. They are unbelievably stubborn. In Dom Sibley's case, he quite rightly not back the opportunity this winter to go with England Lions. And at the time, I thought he was taking a bit of a risk. As it turned out, I think he's made absolutely the right decision, because what he's done is he's spent the whole winter working at just getting himself a little bit more sideways aligned. He's got his hands closer. He's picking his bat up straighter, and therefore the bat is coming down nice and straight. And I sat and watched. He got 100 yesterday at Edgbaston, and watching on the camera, his hands in terms of close to his body, under his head, hitting the ball back past the stumps at the other end, which is what he did in 2019 when he scored thousands of runs for us and got himself into the England team. He has got the mentality to play test match cricket. There is no doubt about that. And that's the biggest challenge. Forget technique. The mentality is the biggest challenge. So I think now that he's got his alignment sorted, his hands closer, I expect him to start brilliantly in county cricket and get himself back into the test team this summer. And I've said many times, when he gets in, he won't come out this time, because he's not looking to do something he hasn't done before. He scored runs. He scored test match hundreds. He knows how to score test match hundreds. And I think once he gets back in, he will be in and play. Rob Yates, different, very different. Left-hander, excellent technique, very good, very mature young man, doing a degree in English at the same time as opening the batting for us over the last 3 years, which is fantastic. He copes brilliantly. You know, he'll end up being Warwickshire's captain in a few years' time. Very simple, very organised technique. Scored 500s in county cricket last year, 100 in the Bob Willis final at Lords at the end of the season. Very, very good player. I'd love him just to have another 12 months of learning in county cricket before he starts to get close. I'd like to think next winter England would take him away again with the Lions. I think they go to Sri Lanka. I'd love to see him go on that trip, and I'd love to see him learn a little bit more about himself and his game. But I think Dom Sibley, without a shadow of a doubt, will come back this summer. Will be better for it. It'll be better for the experience. He is an unbelievably driven player. He really is. And as I say, the mentality is the difference between players playing 7 to 10 test matches and going on and playing 80 to 120 test matches. And I think Dom Sibley's definitely got the mentality to cope with it and do the job.
And apparently Rory Burns is also simplifying his technique. So maybe those two to be reunited top of the order.
Absolutely. When Rory first came into the side, I remember him coming with us to Sri Lanka, his first tour, and I was absolutely blown away again mentally by how strong he is. He really is a fantastic, fantastic player. I'm pleased that he's simplifying his technique. I think that it needs a little bit of simplification, you know. And the one thing that I would say is that during my time working with him, he looked to me to be like the obvious next Test captain. You know, that's how highly I think of Rory. And I think if he can get himself back in, he then does become a contender because he is an excellent cricket brain. I think he's very calm, very unflappable. And again, all the things that you're looking for in a Test match batter, I think Rory Burns has that. Dom Sibley, Rory Burns, I think that they're people that will come again and I think they'll score runs again.
Paul Farbrace, always, always great value. Fantastic to have you on. And thank you for your insights, your knowledge, your wisdom and your time.
Thank you very much. Very enjoyable. Have a good afternoon.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll discuss the candidates for the vacant head coach role with two Australians linked with the post. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can, as always, download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. We're talking about the head coach role for England. Harmy, Justin Langer and Marcus North are the two Australians I referred to. Marcus North is making a late run. He's gone from rank outsider to being talked about a lot, like top three contender.
Yeah, and I understand why, because North is brilliant at what he does. He really is. He's been a fantastic director of cricket at Durham. You just got to look where Durham come from. I've always wondered if ECB would go for the duo combination of Bostock and North. We had Tim on the show a couple of weeks ago. Speaks very, very well. Had a little dig, but not wanted to. It was like an application for the chief executive's job. But I can see why he gave us the lines he did. And I look at the way Durham were rock bottom. I mean, we were going out of business. And all of a sudden, so Ian Botham comes in. They brought Tim Bostock and Marcus North in. And all of a sudden, Durham have not looked back since. So he's rightly in one of the candidates. I think he'll be interviewed. I'm surprised that Keezy, Rob Key, one of my best mates, but I can also understand that.
Well, he's mentioned himself, Harmy. That's why he's being mentioned. He put his hand up in public.
The problem with Keezy is the job just doesn't allow golf, and there's no chance he's going to give his golf up. So that's why I'm surprised. I really am surprised. Unless Keezy's got the shanks and he's given up the game of golf, or even he's fallen out of love with the game of golf, which surprised me very dearly that he'd do it. But I'm laughing here and joking. He would be a great man to have an ECB. Problem I've got with the ECB, I've got a lot of yes men. I've got a lot of men who are insecure, like I was saying to Paul Farbris a second ago. Now, Marcus North, Australian, strongish character, I think he would rock boats. Keezy, I know for a fact. One of the reasons why he hasn't gotten jobs with ECB in the past is because he speaks his mind. You've got to listen to the broadcaster. He's an unbelievable broadcaster. Nasser Hussain, if you could get these people in the system to help benefit English cricket going forward, that's got to be a plus, and that'll eventually filter down. So I think North would be a good choice. I think Keezy would be a good choice. I know there's one or two people mentioned, sort of Mark Nicholas, Ed Smith, different to... So there's candidates out there for director of cricket. Coach, I'd be very surprised if they'll go down the Langer route, but if North gets it, Langer comes in, because obviously the closeness and the Western Australian element of it, I think that would be nearly a shoo-in. What do the England cricket need at this minute? I would say they need a little bit of time, new cycle, trying to get ducks in a row, and then you bring the coach in. Captain says he's not going anywhere, so that's up to the new director of cricket, Sir Andrew Strauss. But I've seen good things out here with Paul Collingwood. I really have. I've seen a group of men who are together, and Barfar, the crack under pressure. I thought they handled the pressure well in Antigua, did well in Barbados. But you're judged on your results. And unfortunately for Paul and for Marcus and for the rest of the team, that they ended up on a 1-0 defeat against a side that they should have beaten. That might have gone against Paul Collingwood, but like I said, I'd give him the job. I really would. I've spoke to a few batters, and they love working with Marcus Trzaskowski. So for me, that's a non-negotiable. He stays in whatever system that he's coming. I think Paul stays in whatever system's coming. And if they need an experienced man or somebody that's got a little bit more fire about him, and if that's Langer, so be it. But I think that the people that have had this team coaching here at this minute in time, I think have turned a corner.
There's been a problem in English cricket over the years, Harmy, and you've spoken a lot about it. The best bits have all been off air, unfortunately, about about jobs for the boys. And, it's understandable to some extent, because somebody gets put in a position or hired in a position to hire other people. They hire those they know and they've worked with before, and then they get accused of nepotism. But I do just think that maybe, Paul Collingwood staying on, being given the job full time, might be. I asked you about this last week, and you said that you did think there was sufficient distance between him and the players. But you need someone, Harmy, to say, if you want to bat on off stump and score runs in the county championship, you can do it, but you're not going to play in the test team, okay? Batting on the off stump hasn't worked for about 100 years. The best players in the history of test cricket have generally batted on leg stump or middle and leg. So that's what you're going to have to do. Oh, and you hit the target area with the new ball 16% of the time. That's pathetic, okay? You weren't unlucky, and you're not going to play test cricket. As long as I'm in charge, that is unacceptable. Can you hit the target area 50% of the time, please, with the new ball? Can you do that? People say, what do they mean by England needs a hard coach? What do they mean? It's not making people run laps of the ground. It's not making them sit in an ice bath. It's being honest about their ability, isn't it?
Asking challenging questions. What's your method and how? What's your end goal and how do you get to the conclusion that you bat an off stump? What is the benefits of batting an off stump? And then when they say X, Y, and Z, then you say, this is why I'm saying you can't bat an off stump. Anything outside your eye line, you can't play at as an opening batsman for the first session. You can't. And you shouldn't be playing at these things, even though there's a wide open space at extra cover. And there's Zach Crawley. But you've got to make sure that your head is so in line and your balance is so in line, because the second you fall over, you miss it on the inside, DRS wins every single time. Because an umpire can stand see that there's no stumps to see. So you're going to get, and then you're making the stumps wider because if an LBW decision, bang, it just has to clip because the umpire's going to give you out. There's no way an umpire's not going to give you out if you get hit on a pad bat and not stumped. So a lot, these are all benefits of scoring shots, benefits of trying to line the ball up possibly. You know, any movement to sort of smother any movement. For me, it's far outweighed of, well, you're going to get out batting an off stump. There's a lot more ways to get out on off stump. And unfortunately, in international cricket, bowlers bowl in the channel and they're very, very skillful. And that's, for me, that's what a coach, a good coach should be saying. But it's, a good coach is strong. Like you mentioned, he's not about laps or anything like that, but he asks you serious questions and he asks you hard questions. And if you've not got the answers to them, then he doesn't pick you because you haven't got the weight of runs to back you up or the wickets that you've got. So that would be from a hard coach's point of view.
Okay, let's remind ourselves of what Matt Prior said needs to happen with county cricket.
We absolutely need a better standard of first-class cricket, no doubt about it. And the gap between test cricket and first-class or county championship cricket is always going to be big. You know, there's no getting away from that. But right now, it is monumental. What the conditions players are playing in, and I'm not blaming the individuals and the players. They're playing the game that is in front of them. They're playing on the surfaces that are prepared for them. They're playing under the format and, you know, point system that is decided by other people. When you all the points are on wins and you turn up and play on cabbage patches, how are we teaching young batsmen to score big hundreds? You're not. Average 30 in a season, and it's like brilliant, fantastic. As long as we win the game. That's ridiculous. County cricket, first class cricket, is there to prepare young players as best as possible so that when they walk out at the Gabba, they have got the technique and the performances behind them that gives them a chance.
That was Matt Prior just emphasising the importance of the quality and standard of county cricket. And let's sum things up very quickly, Harmy. I know that you can talk for another 15 minutes on the improvement of county cricket, but basically we're looking at strengthening the top end of the county game, not having a point system so weighted in favour of victory that counties prepare result pitches, and that we have strength versus strength, play a little bit less on better pitches. And there are various ways of doing that, promotion and relegation, three conferences. But that's basically what we're trying to do, isn't it? Like push all the best players at the top so they play against each other in high intensity competitions on good pitches where bowlers have to work hard for their wickets.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to play less. I know Farby said about, you know, that we play on good pitches. You might do it Warwickshire, but it's not all around the country because scores are telling you that. And I'm not having a go at the groundsman here when I say play on better pitches. I'd like to play less games, which gives the groundsman less games on his field and he can prepare the field, make sure the pitch is the best he possibly can. Farby carrying balls, carrying to slip. That's what we want. Don't think it's happening all around the country. And the system at the minute, for me, is flawed when you're picking up good points for draws and things like that. For me, even a simple 3 points for a win, you know, that's it. You get 3 points for a win. You get nothing for a loss. And you get a point for drawn, like the football way. You're trying to sort of simplify it. You go and win a game. You've got 4 days, like in Test cricket, it's 5 days. Doesn't mean it's got to go 5 days. Doesn't mean it's got to go 4 days. Play the best cricket you possibly can and you win matches. And you win as many matches as you possibly can to win the county championship. Two divisions I don't have a problem with, promotion and relegation, and make it easier for players to move around. Make it easier for players to move around. Big counties will always get bigger and stronger, but that's inevitable to do that anyway. The Stuart Broad is always going to leave Leicestershire to go to Nottingham. It was just a matter of when he did it. And unfortunately, that's what smaller counties, that's the dog-eat-dog world that they've got to try and, they can't overcome. They've got to take it in. That's life. That's what these test venues have got. You produce your best players you possibly can to be the best team you possibly can. And if you do that, that will produce more England players.
Okay, so just to sum up, all the points I made are valid, but you're just going to throw in a transfer system as well.
I've got no problem with a transfer system in that front, that you can go and get the best players. And if you want to incentivize it, it's the same as the Blast in the 100. they've got to put them two together, not as in the same competition, but you can have your player auction, English player auction, after the blast is finished. So you're giving a county cricketer who's had a great blast a chance to go in and get a lucrative contract, 30, 40, 50, 60 grand contract off the back of a good blast. He's not in this 100 this year. So look, little Johnny, who gets a big score, you know, does well in the blast, doesn't get 100 gig because all the positions are filled. So there'll be a link into it. So for me, I think the same transfer system, let people move around, and then you'll build your own club and your old identity in the same way, rather than having a good side having 14 players with three players missing out, four players missing out, five players missing out, because you can't balance your teams up and you play two players that you don't really want to play, but you know, we need that position filled. There were then them good players should be playing at other clubs, and you could see the smaller clubs getting better because all the best players in the country are playing every single week.
If anybody's listening at the ECB, just bear that in mind, would you? Transfer window, end of July. Okay, massive, massive game on Thursday. England face South Africa in the early hours. The Australians, of course, face West Indies, who snuck into the semi-finals courtesy of South Africa's extraordinary last group game win against India, which knocked them out. Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, we've had 7 or 8 of the closest World Cup games all in one tournament, and then that game between South Africa and India, with South Africa chasing down the second highest score ever. In fact, it was the highest run chase in a Women's World Cup. Absolutely extraordinary finish, with India thinking they'd won the game with Mignon Dupria, the South African batter, holding out to long on, only for it to be called a no ball. The third last ball of the match, it was desperate, desperate stuff. Incredibly emotional. But from an England point of view, Harmy, they pitch up as defending champions, lose their first three games, and then in order to retain it, have to win 5 in a row, like 4 semi-finals and a final. They're in the semi-final. They won their last 4 games in the group stages, and they seem to be getting better.
They do, and it's great to see. You know, we talked last week. We said that if they want to do it, they've got a chance if they get to the semi-final and breeze in the semi-final as well, because they've been playing knockout cricket. They've been playing high-demand, high-pressure cricket. Men could take a little bit of a leaf out of the book of playing under pressure and playing under pressure well, but they've been fantastic. We've been watching mainly on the highlights. I've seen a few highlights packages sitting against the bottom. There's a lovely beach bar about 100 yards from our hotel, and me and Butcher have watched Raise the Glass to the Women every single time that we watch the highlights package, and they've gone through, and it has been a great tournament. Talked about the games, you know, seven or eight tight games. I thought the little video that the ICC put out the other night, which was there was West Indies sort of team room while the game was going on in South Africa. That was brilliant. That was fantastic. And things like that are going to enhance the women's game. You know, if the men's game is struggling a little bit, it's gone in the opposite direction to the women's game. Power in the men's game is going all towards sort of India and, you know, the IPL and everything, that's the white ball IPL stuff. And India are getting stronger, and other teams around the world are wiltering a little bit. In the women's game, the whole game seems to be getting better, which is great to see. And, you know, that's something that England could benefit from if they can somehow get through the semi-final. And I'm sure they'll play Australia in the final.
OK, here's what Captain Heather Knight had to say before the semi-final.
Yeah, I think if you'd given me this situation 2 weeks ago, I would have bitten your hand off. It's been a remarkable turnaround. I think credit to everyone in the group, all of the staff. I think it shows the character that we've got in this group to pick ourselves up after a pretty poor start to the competition and obviously qualify. But yeah, really excited to be in the semi-finals. Repeat, obviously, of 2017, that semi-final against South Africa. So yeah, really in a good place. We've obviously built a little bit of momentum in the last few games. Feel like we're peaking at the right time, hopefully, and looking forward to getting going on Thursday.
They certainly are peaking because they lost the first three games, and they're certainly on an upwards graph there. I do feel for the West Indies. Well, they've got nothing to lose against Australia, I suppose. Australia are that much better than everybody else, it seems. They won 7 out of 7. So West Indies, they've got a free hit, really, against Australia. A few other stories from around the world. Harmy, we've understandably focused on England's inadequacies. I must say, at times it looked that the series looked like two teams brandishing their inadequacies at each other and seeing which one was more inadequate than the other. And I don't mean that in any way to be unkind, but we should actually pay a little bit more credit to the West Indies for particularly their performance. Well, no, actually holding on in the first two tests and then bouncing back so strongly. So I'll ask you to pay a little bit of credit to them, as I say also that remind people, Trevor Bayliss is back in England. He's set to take over the London Spirit as head coach, replacing the late, great Shane Warne. It's Warne's remembrance ceremony at the MCG later this week. Those are a couple of the stories that have caught my attention. But good on the West Indies. Good on them. I mean, good on Jason Holder for not going to the IPL and for wanting to play cricket for the West Indies. Good on Craig Brathwaite. Good on all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I couldn't agree more. They handled... Like, I asked Joe in that sort of press conference that we had, did the West Indies, were the West Indies a better side, or was it just they won the better moments, the big moments? And the big moments were at the end of Antigua when Jason Holder came in at number six or number seven and batted for 100 balls. England had 71 overs at the West Indies to win the game on the last day. Couldn't do it, ended up being four down. Similar happened in Barbados. And then when the pressure was on England, Kyle Mayers ran up and bowled 77 mile an hour at the top of off stump, and England crashed. England just capitulated. So they did win the better moments. They won the better series. Craig Brathwaite was unbelievable. The other way, England didn't bowl badly at him by any stretch of the imagination. He played on three pitches where if you had a solid defence, you had a bit of discipline, you didn't play a big shot away from your body, exactly the way Craig Brathwaite plays, then it was going to be difficult for the bowlers to get you out. And that's what happened, leading run score of 350 runs or something. So, yeah, I think full credit. I was on air with Ian Bishop on day five, on day four, right at the very end. And he had a go. And it's the first time, really, that Bish gives his sort of an opinion, an out-there opinion. And he was saying he was very disappointed at the way the night before's headline, or the morning's headlines, was all about Joe Root getting sacked and the England capitulation, rather than say how well done Kyle Miles had bowled. I think that was the biggest one, as well as, you know, Brathwaite. And he had a point. He really did have a point. But I did say to him on air, I said, the story is not about Miles getting the wickets. It's about one of the greatest players in the game possibly losing his job. And I think we always look for sensational headlines rather than patting somebody on the back, the West Indies were excellent. They've been a great host, and Jason Holder, for me, is one of the most impressive men in world cricket, not only because he's a good batsman, a bowler and a fielder, but because he's a really, really nice guy as well.
And on that note, we shall take our leave. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed. Now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever else you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, as we build up to the start of the County Championship. This has been The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.